Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Barely Bookish Podcast. Today, we're going to be continuing our discussion of The Great Gatsby, and we'll be covering chapters 2 and 3, and I will be joined once again by Jessica. So this episode really just kind of jumps into it immediately because the previous recording was really long, so it's cut in half now, which is great, and it's a lot of fun. I think you guys will really enjoy Jessica. I hope you guys enjoyed Jessica in the first episode, but I think there's a lot of fun discussion in this one, and I think The Great Gatsby has a lot of potential for a lot of, you know, a lot of discussion, I guess, is what I'm going for, and I think that that makes these kinds of episodes a little different and a lot, like, very enjoyable, at least in my opinion, so I'm really hoping you guys are enjoying that as well. So, without further ado, I don't really have any big announcements. Oh, the only announcement I really do have, on Friday we'll be doing our Great Gatsby comparison. So that's over on patreon.com. So if you want some more exclusive content and some extra episodes, you can go over and subscribe over on patreon.com/barelybookish. And then every single month you get an exclusive episode over there. So this month will be the Great Gatsby comparison. So we'll be comparing the 1974 movie with Robert Redford, and we'll be comparing that to the 2013 movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I'll be doing that with Nova. So if you want some extra content, please go check out the Patreon page. It's just $10 a month. It helps support this lovely podcast that you're listening to. So yeah, but without further ado, let's get into the episode. So then chapter 2, and okay, so I had no idea what was going on at the beginning, and my note is, so there's a gross farm and a giant man for some reason, because he just, yes, like, describes, like, this dirty wasteland and, like, mm-hmm, this giant mural painting situation, and I'm like, whoa, where are we? I need a little context of how we got here.
Yeah, it's like, suddenly he's in this place that's totally desolate, and the only thing there is this faded billboard of, like, what I can just imagine is the freakiest picture of this dude's eyes.
Yeah.
And I will say that image is something that is so discussed in literary criticism of this book, and what that image means and what that setting means. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of hit you as this is a place so different than the place that we just came from.
Mm-hmm. I wondered if it was, like, because this chapter is very, like, looking back on it, I wonder if that was, like, supposed to be reminiscent of Nick's mood, because he doesn't seem like he wanted to go to New York with Tom, and Tom's like, we're going, and he's like, okay,
cool. I mean, okay, sure, I'll go to New York, I guess, if I have to. Why are you forcing me?
Yeah.
I feel like it's definitely an allusion to the feelings and the weirdness of the situation and whatnot. I don't want to spoil anything, but I know that this setting gets seen again in the book.
Okay.
But it definitely felt like it's even more detailed described of how, you know, shabby it is, mm-hmm, because of maybe the mood that Nick is in. Sure, I can see that.
Sure. I'm just imagining Nick being like, I'm on a terrible trip. You know, like, when you take, like, a 4-year-old on a road trip they don't want to be on, and they're like, this car's ugly, this food tastes bad, I want chicken nuggets, I want to watch Paw Patrol. I had to think of, like, a kid's movie. I was like, show, I guess. That's what I'm imagining, is Tom being like, can I just, like, get out of this? And they're like, no.
Well, it almost feels,
Nick, I mean,
it almost feels to me like, you know, it was a situation like Nick was like, well, I'm going to go to New York for the day. And Tom was like, I'm going to go too. Let's go together. And then all of a sudden just stops and was like, hey, what? We're actually going to do this. Don't care, yeah, what you had on your list.
Literally. Which,
yeah.
And it's funny to me that we don't know what day this is. Like, Nick might have had to work. Like, I don't think this is the weekend.
Yeah. But Tom doesn't care. Tom doesn't work.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to work.
So my note is, Nick is meeting Tom's mistress. I'm ready for the tea.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Tom is so open about this, which makes me hate him more. Mm-hmm. So Nick went to New York with Tom, and then Tom's like, hey, I want you to meet my girl. And Nick's like, could I not? And Tom's like, no, we're going. So this is my note, because I was trying to figure out what's going on right now, because I didn't know he was like a serial cheater or what. So I was like, is this an open relationship or is Tom a tool? If Daisy is cool with it, I don't care. But I feel like I need some confirmation from Daisy right now because I'm hating Tom.
And I feel like regardless of that, the fact mm-hmm. that he's so open about it and he's just so proud of it and mm-hmm. he's not hiding it from anyone, like in their social circles or anything, that is it, given the context of the time period,
yeah,
such a disrespectful thing against mm-hmm. Daisy, and it really reflects on all aspects. So regardless yeah. of, even if they had some sort of agreement, which I don't think that this book leads you to believe that yeah, it does,
like it.
It's just that behavior is so abhorrent. That's not appropriate behavior, no matter what, the yeah. way that he handles the situation.
Because like, if they were a polyamorous couple, I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, great. You know, do you, I don't care. But like, it doesn't lead you to believe that. And I was like, okay, so you're just a trash bag.
I mean, because given the context of this time, I'm sure that polyamory was alive and well, but yeah. even in that situation, him being so open and so flaunting of mm-hmm. something that clearly based on their social standing and
yeah.
their families and whatnot is not the norm and is not mm-hmm. something that people would look on as normal or respectable. Certainly that is Tom making poor choices.
Yeah. Because I feel like if they were, they would have mentioned, like, he would have been like, oh yeah, my girlfriend, instead of saying, like, you know, and then being very open about it while she was in the room. But he never says anything while mm-hmm. Daisy's in the room. So I was like, okay. So I was like, so you're not a great person.
No, definitely. Another one in the column of why we don't like Tom.
Mm-hmm. Just adding on to Tom hate in this podcast.
It's now like the opposite of a Tom Stan account. It's a Tom hate account.
Yeah. Listen, I love it. You know, I am okay with that. Send me all the Tom hate, because like, I agree with it. I don't care what it is. You can tell me that he reminds you of a Raisin Bran muffin, and I'm going to say, yeah, I feel that. I can see it, you know?
I'm willing to go on that journey with you.
I'll just send them to you and you're going to be like, this is great. I love this. Thank you. So at this moment where Tom and Nick are walking around and he takes him to like this auto body shop, I guess. And I'm like, why are we here, Tom? What's going on? Like, why are we at this auto body shop? And then they're like, oh, this nice apartment over it. And then a woman comes down who is the auto body shop owner's wife. And I'm like, oh no, his mistress has a husband.
A clueless husband in the dust-filled yeah. auto shop, where it seems that Tom is trying to string along his, yeah. Well, no, I think he's trying to string along like his reason for being there as this, he might potentially sell this car to this mm-hmm. guy, or might potentially let this guy work on his car or whatever. Sell it. And so that's his ruse for why he's there in this clueless dude's auto body shop.
I just feel so bad for this husband, because I feel like he's trying.
Uh-huh.
You know, he seems like a decent guy. He owns the shop. They have a really nice apartment above the shop. And, you know, I'm assuming that's so that he can go home early to his wife, care for her, make her happy. And like the entire time, this dude keeps coming in, and then his wife keeps immediately disappearing as soon as this guy leaves. And I'm like, oh no, like this is almost worse.
Mm-hmm. Or is the apartment actually nice upstairs? Or is that just what, you know, what Nick assumes must be the case based yeah. on the situation.
How pretty she is, probably.
Yeah, because for all we know, it could be just as dusty and just as desolate upstairs as it was in the shop. Mm-hmm. Even just that description of, and we're probably getting so much in the weeds, the listeners are probably totally bored. It's fun. But
I love it.
The description of the guy and his shop, it definitely doesn't lead you to feel like this is someone who has a lot of hope, a lot of spirit, you know, really interesting. I mean, he's not taking care of the shop that well. The yeah. interior was unprosperous and bare. The only car visible was a dust-covered wreck. Like, that's not yeah. a bustling mechanic shop with a guy who's, you know, virile and whatever. And then in walks Tom, who, like, we've basically described as the embodiment of the guy on the top, on the front of one of those bodice-ripping romance novels. Like,
yeah.
plus add a rugby ball in his hand or whatever. You know, that's basically how he's been described. And he meets this dude as the mechanic.
Yeah.
And then down walks the lady with her, you know, her curves and her mature, knowing look or whatever.
I feel so bad for this husband. I really do. Cause I'm feeling he has full faith and trust in his wife. And now, like, she's like, okay, bye. Don't ask how I got these designer handbags. But bye.
I feel bad for the husband, you know, but honestly, I feel most bad for Nick because he's sort of trapped in the situation.
I know. I feel bad that Nick's like that person that just knows all the juicy gossip, but he doesn't want to know any of it. And yes. he's like, please stop telling me. And they're like, you seem like a trustworthy soul. And he's like, no, please. I don't want to know.
Yes. I feel that 100%. I would say he's the kind of guy who has a face that looks like you can tell him your life story.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, every single person has seen that face.
Yeah. And he's just like burdened with the truth. And he's like, okay. And he's like, am I too nice of a guy to like tell her? Or like, am I too trusting? Like, he's like, how do I get out of this?
Exactly.
So Myrtle and Tom are just like walking down the street, and they're dragging Nick along to this entire adventure afternoon. And Myrtle randomly buys a dog for $10 for no reason. And I'm like, so you must be going with him all the time because she can't bring that dog back home.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. So I'm like, who's taking care of this dog?
She's not thinking about that. She's all about immediate gratification. And yeah. And poor Nick being dragged along. And this is the part where he asks, he's like, I gotta go. They're like, yeah, no, you don't. You know, it's just another one of those things. Like, it's immediate gratification. It's fun to have him with them. It's fun to get this dog. The dog is cute. Oh, I'm going to take it home to my apartment here in the city because yeah. oh, that makes me feel good. And it's just, it's all just immediate things. It's not realistic. It's not thinking through, what does it mean to have this dog that is
yeah.
not going to be this cute little puppy forever? And frankly, is going to change its needs the second you walk away from this person selling it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. I was just like, it hurt me. It's like when people get their kids dogs for Christmas, uh-huh. you know, it hurts me the same way. Cause I'm like, is this dog going to be taken care of? I'm like nervous. I'm like, if you never had that talk with your significant other or partner or whatever to make sure, hey, you know, I really want to get a dog, can we fit this in our schedule? Like, if you have not had that conversation, do not get a pet.
Yeah. As a dog lover, mm-hmm. this is definitely one of those where you're on the side going, that was a poor decision.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm worried about the dog safety at this point. Like, I'm sure they have people that'll take care of the dog, but I'm like, it's not going to get the love it needs. And I'm nervous.
Which then is another thing in the Tom Collin, because, you know, he mm-hmm. obviously doesn't care about the safety and sanctity of dogs. So
another one out for me. He's like one of those people that has like a hunting dog, but like it sleeps outside and it's only brought yes. out for hunting. That's what I'm getting.
But he doesn't even hunt. So like really what he has is he has a hunting dog for status. And as far as mm-hmm. he's concerned, it sleeps outside. But thank God there's a guy who actually works in the stables and who takes care of a dog as if it was its loving own. Yes. That's what I like to think.
Okay. I like that better. I like that theory. Cause I'm just imagining that like when Tom wakes up, the dog's there and he looks at the dog for about 20 minutes. And that's the only 20 minutes the dog's in a cage. And then like the guy's like, all right, let's go back home, champ. And exactly. Champ's like,
that's what I like to think about. Yeah. Because then they describe, I mean, it's so clear that this dog is just an item because they even describe Mrs. Wilson gathering up her dog and her other purchases.
It's like, okay. And then, so then Tom and Myrtle literally have their own apartment in New York. So I was like, they must go there pretty often, like to just have this whole apartment.
Yeah. This whole apartment that's furnished and decorated, and they know the neighbors, like the weird neighbors who also live in the building. I know. Come and visit, and then they go off to, like, I don't know, have some alone time, and they leave Nick in the living room with the dog.
He's also wasted at this point. Like, Nick is, like, black out. He's, like, can't read. And yeah. Tom and Myrtle go away, and I said probably to do the do. Like, it's implied. I think we all know why they went away.
I feel like it's implied that it's definitely doing the do, 100%.
Yeah. And then, like, Nick's just, I'm imagining him doing, like, that, you know, like that dad thing where you just kind of like sit in a chair and you're like, you okay? Like, and they're just like sitting there looking at nothing, doing absolutely nothing, and just sitting in a chair, like as if you put Nick on pause for a few minutes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I also imagine him trying as hard as he can not to hear anything. Because if you've ever been, like, you know, in someone's house and like something's going on that you don't want anything to do with it, that could be a conversation, whatever, it doesn't have to be people doing the do, but whatever, and you're just sitting there like, just gonna pretend like I'm not listening to this, like I can't hear anything, like I'm not involved, because on really like a bunch of levels he's in a very precarious situation. Yeah. So you know, there's that level of like, just in general, this is weird and I don't want to be here, but then that level of like, this dude is like flagrantly actively cheating on his wife, who is my cousin, while I sit here. And also he got me drunk on liquor that may or may not be legal. I don't know. Yeah.
I just think Nick's going through it at this point.
Yeah. And then he left me to talk to a bunch of these randos who I've never met before, but definitely are described quite colorfully.
Yeah. So like then one of the people that comes is Myrtle's sister Catherine, and she's looking at the place as if she owns it, like looking at all the furniture, and like this is the point where Nick's like, hey, like do you live here or something? And she's like, no, like I live in a hotel with my girlfriend. And I'm like,
not buying it at all.
Yeah, I'm like, first of all, like I know that like it's a different time, but like living in a hotel seems a little strange.
I think that there were like boarding houses and like hotel type things that were for unmarried women where they would live together. I mean, you see it, I've seen it a lot in those period dramas from, you know, this time period to like through the 40s, of a bunch of like nurses living in nurses' lodging kind of thing, you know, real adorable. So I feel like the casual reader, that wouldn't be too weird of this time period. But I definitely got the vibe of like, oh yeah, no, you actually do live here and you probably were tipped off that she was coming and so you left.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out if that's what was happening or if she was jealous of her sister or if it's like one of those things where maybe Tom has both.
I don't know about that last part. I didn't get her to be like, in my reading of it, that she was also a mistress of his, but definitely she has more familiarity with this home than I think, you know, just the casual I stop by occasionally. And if nothing else, it just shows even more how often they come to the city if she's that familiar with it.
Or I wonder if like Tom, like if she owns it and then Tom pays her off to say that he owns it when she brings, when he brings Myrtle over.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get to that.
You're like, we shall see. Anyways.
I don't think that part is, I mean, I will just say, I don't think it spoils anything, but I don't think that part is something that's like quite as much involved with the overall scope of the story.
Yeah.
But it is one of those, it's one of those little teeny interesting details that if you want to take the time to really delve into it in this story, there's a lot to unpack.
I know. I feel like I want someone else to do the critical readings and then like sum it up for me.
I mean, type Great Gatsby into JSTOR and you will find all those people who've done all those critical. You will find people who've done critical reading to find something that you didn't even know was a possible thing. You'll go back to the book and be like, wow, they did say that in the book. I don't know how that person got from here to there, but damn if they didn't spend 10 pages telling me.
That's the kind of things I love. I love like fan theories. I love fan fictions. I like alternative realities. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? Do tell me how Draco Malfoy is in love with Harry Potter. I do want to know. Like, tell me about it.
Sure.
Like,
tell me how you see that. Absolutely. Let's work this out.
I want to know. Yeah. Or that whole fan theory where Fred and George were like saw that Ron was sleeping with Peter every night and never said anything because they had the Marauder's map. Like, tell me about that. I do want to know.
Yeah. Like, what did you think that was about?
Man? I know. Were they just like super accepting brothers and they're like, oh, he's not out to us. Like, we're never going to bring it up.
Did they think there was a ghost named Peter that was like just randomly obsessed with sleeping on top of Ron every night?
Yeah.
Like, what's the story here?
I know. I want the thought process and I want to know how you got there. Like, I would love that for everyone in the world to experience and also myself.
Absolutely. 100%. Give me that information. Yeah.
So they're having this whole party.
So hold on a second. Before you get too far down, did you talk about Mr. McKee?
And his like weird photography obsession thing.
Yeah. So how about that? Right after they introduce the sister, they introduce this next dude who is described as pale, feminine man. So this plays in with some more of those thoughts of Nick's sexuality, because this guy keeps talking about how he wants to take pictures of him. And he's, you know, he's taken pictures of Myrtle. He's done all this stuff. He's an interesting character.
I know. I'm like,
I mean, maybe not as far as like Gatsby's concerned, but as far as Nick is concerned, he is a very interesting character to me.
I know. I want more about the side characters. I know we're not going to get that much about them, but I'm like, I want to know. And like his wife is just like, oh, I've done all these photos for him. And I'm like, is she your wife or is she like a stand-in person so you can always have photography done? Like, I don't
like, take me on this journey with you.
Yeah. Take my hand, lead me down the yellow brick road. I want to know what's going on.
Okay, anyway, sorry, go on with your next note.
So Myrtle is like absolutely roasting her husband for no reason at this party, and I'm like, okay, Myrtle, like unnecessary, but all right.
And the lady doth protest too much.
And then Myrtle says that her and Tom met on the subway by chance and like very creepily says that like, yeah, he basically kind of kidnapped me. But like,
after he like rubbed himself against me.
Yeah.
A woman who was alone on the train. So after he like kind of weirdly maybe adjacent to assaulted you, now you're alone with him and doing God knows what.
Yeah. And she's like, all I kept thinking was like, what did she say? Like, I'll survive or something.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, are you okay? Like, do you need to be rescued? Like, should I call someone for you, Myrtle? Like,
you can't live forever. You can't live forever.
Oh, that's what it is.
Thinking over and over. Well, and then, you know, they casually gloss over the fact that one of the reasons that she's shit talking her husband or whatever is that, you know, they both hate their people that they're married to. And if Daisy wasn't a Catholic, then Tom could have broken up with her and divorced her or whatever. And I'm just imagining Nick being like,
I didn't even she was see not that a Catholic. Part.
Oh yeah. Like, that's like right after they're talking about how, neither of them can stand their significant other. Catherine says triumphantly, "It's really his wife that's keeping them apart. She's a Catholic and they don't believe in divorce." Daisy was not a Catholic, and I was a little shocked at the elaborateness of the lie.
I read chapter one right before bed, so I must have just like accidentally skipped over that part, but I was like, that's...
But anyway.
The fact that like Tom is telling her that's why he won't divorce Daisy.
It's so ludicrous.
So then everyone's like drunk and Myrtle is like chanting Daisy's name, and then Tom breaks her nose.
Oh yeah, because he's just a brute. Like, he just can't go back.
I was like, and it didn't make it sound like it was an accident. It made it sound like it was very much on purpose that he broke her nose.
Yeah, it makes it sound like he literally punches her.
Yeah, like, but he open hands it.
Yeah.
And so like,
he literally like strikes her in the face on purpose.
Yeah. I was like,
with all of his strength.
Because no one at the party was concerned either. They like stopped the bleeding, and then Nick's like, "This is my cue to go." And then Mr. McKee's also like, "Yeah, that sounds cool." And they both like leave.
They both like leave, and then really at the end of the chapter, you're given what plenty of literary critics have wanted to talk in great depth about, this wonderful scene of Nick standing beside Mr. McKee's mm-hmm. bed while he was sitting up between the sheets, clad only in his underwear. So,
do we have different versions of this book?
Hold on. This is the last page of chapter two. So Nick gets in the elevator to leave because he's like, this is way too much for me. I cannot be here for any more of this shit. They get in the elevator, and Mr. McKee asks him, come to lunch someday, he suggested, as we groaned down the elevator. Where? Anywhere. And then, you know, the elevator guy's like, don't touch my lever. Dot, dot, dot. Like, phallic symbol right there. Ooh. And so he says, all right, I'd be glad to. And then you next thing you know, we have a set of ellipses. And he's like, I was standing beside his bed and he was sitting up between the sheets, clad in his underwear, with a great portfolio in his hands. And the next thing you know, Nick finds himself lying half asleep in the cold lower level of the Pennsylvania station. So like basically drunk off his like face in the train station.
I'm shook. Sorry for my dog barking, dear listeners. I'm not going to cut that out because it's too important. But
so that whole scene of Nick going in the elevator, you know, and then being in the room with this photographer, and it's very sexually charged, the scene. And then sort of almost seeming like he was intoxicated to the point of not knowing what happened. That is something that people love to discuss. So regardless of if, I don't really know as a reader if, as a side note, like Nick's sexuality matters at all in my understanding mm-hmm. of him telling the story and him being a narrator of the story. But it's really interesting that Fitzgerald makes this decision to include these little snippets about Nick and his private life mm-hmm. throughout the book. Because this is now at least the second point where he's given some allusion that he, you know, has had some sort of interactions that are not strictly as we would think of them as like heterosexual mm-hmm. relations. And it's kind of like, do I need to know that as a reader to understand the rest of the story? Spoiler alert, having read the entire story, I don't think that that's the case, but just interesting. And a lot of people love to talk about it. And it is something that kind of sneaks up on you. All of a sudden you're like, what? Like, how did we get here?
I do think it's interesting too, to think that like maybe he didn't see it represented enough in literature. So he's like, I'm just going to like throw this in a little bit and we'll see if anybody picks up on it.
Yeah. And I think like it's pretty known that he himself and his wife, they had, you know, they had really progressive views and experience, and their relationship was different than, you know, strictly like heterosexual monogamous mm-hmm. relationship. And so it could be that, you know, maybe he's channeling a little bit of himself or his own relations or his, or people that he knows and loves. Absolutely. But I definitely don't think this is a throwaway. I don't think this is something that is in the story as like, oh yeah, no, that's not like, oh, Tef, that's definitely not gay. Like, I think it's intentional that yeah. you put that in there, but I don't personally know for myself, like what it does to change the rest of the story, really. Yeah. Only to say that in his, so prior to this, I think Nick had seemed to be pretty much a really just even, you know, moderate kind of dude. And prior, and now under the tutelage of one Tom Buchanan, he's mm-hmm. staying out all night long and getting blackout drunk. And so yeah. that kind of talks even more to the kind of influence that a Tom Buchanan can have.
Yeah, honestly. I do also though wonder if like maybe the author was like wanting to kind of hint at it to be like, you know, Nick is this great guy. And also there are other things besides heterosexuality and they're still great people.
Because oh, like, yeah, I feel like that's,
yeah.
Yeah. I think that's valid too. I mean, that could be, he doesn't really ever, as far as I know. And again, there's a scholar out there of F. Scott Fitzgerald who's going to tell me otherwise, but, I don't know that he directly addresses that at all, but it certainly could be read that way from a modern yeah. viewer because yeah, Nick is a pretty cool dude. He's a pretty awesome dude. And
has morals.
Yeah. He's nice. He has morals. He's not strictly heterosexual as we can tell from the book. I mean, mm-hmm. but he's still a cool, nice dude. And he still is an upstanding individual who seems trustworthy in his narration. So that's yeah. really cool. It's good to have representation that doesn't suck.
Yeah, literally.
That is interesting. Very interesting to look into. But anyway, that was a huge digression.
We love a little tangent. It's okay. So now chapter 3.
Dun, 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 dun.
So Nick is looking over at his neighbor's house and talking about how he sees like all sorts of parties. And this is like his summary of the summer. Mm-hmm. And tonight he's having a gigantic party and Nick's actually going to go. Ooh. And this is like the point where he mentions that he was actually specifically invited. And the rest of these people just kind of show up like it's an amusement park.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how he talks about basically like, there's so many parties all the time that are so lavish that he's completely desensitized to it, that he can just be like, yeah, so over the course of the summer, this happened about 100 times. This is what yeah. happens. Yeah. And then to know that he specifically, like you said, he specifically was asked. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people are just don't even know who Gatsby is, don't know anything yeah. about him, but he gets an actual butler to come over and give him a written invitation.
I know.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think that already says a lot about Gatsby's character too, is that mm-hmm. he's like, hey, I'm going to formally invite you. I know you live in a shack, but like, here's a formal invitation. Like the right. fact that he treats him the same as he would treat anyone else that's his friend, whether they're rich or not, mm-hmm. kind of like hit me right. I was like, all right, we're cool. Like so far, so good. This is a point in your favor, Gatsby.
But it also makes you question just right from the beginning, you know, if Nick can say that he's one of the few people that he knows had actually been invited, it really points that Gatsby is not the kind of dude who probably has a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot of acquaintances.
Yeah, like a lot of people know what they think Gatsby is. They see him as, but they probably almost nobody actually knows Gatsby.
Yeah. And I think that's very telling when we get to like the part where they start gossiping in a second. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I think that is a very telling. So before we get there, Nick is completely unable to find Gatsby anywhere, but he does find Jordan Baker and he's like, oh, hey, I know you. Let's hang out. Like he's basically trying to cling to someone that he knows to like fall around like a little lost puppy. And like, I've been there. So I'm 100%. Like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I felt those feelings hard. I was like, wow, Nick, this is the time-honored tradition of finding the first you know and clinging hard. Got it.
It's like when you go, like pre-Rona, uh-huh. when we would go to like clubs and stuff, and you're like, you show up with your friend, and then your friend starts like talking to a guy, and you're like, oh no. And you're like looking around, and you see like that roommate from college, and you're like, you, I know you. Okay, hey, how are you? What's up? I have not seen you in forever. And you're just like looking back at your friend, and you're like, you're selfish. this selfish person. You left me alone. Okay, yeah, it's nice to see you again. How are you?
Or I think if it is like, if you go to like a work party or a holiday party, you know, again, pre-Rona, and it seems like you don't know everyone, or you probably don't even know majority, but you know one person or two people, and you're like, you're my best friend for this evening. Yeah. And somehow you just stick with that person. Oh, would you like another drink? Let's go get one together.
Yeah, you're like, okay, we'll follow each other to the bathroom. Oh, you're getting a drink, I will follow you to the bar.
Leaving? I guess I'm leaving too, even though we weren't actually really friends before this moment. I knew your face.
Yeah, now you are my best friend. Thank you.
I will say that's one thing I am not missing this holiday season, is that feeling.
Yeah, I only worked at small companies, so I didn't really have that issue. But when I was in the American Marketing Association in college, we had this giant like end of year, essentially Christmas, but it was like an end of year dinner, end of semester, I guess. And I was like, I only knew a couple of people, and I brought my boyfriend along with me, and we all just like huddled together, and I was like, I will speak to no one else. So Jordan lost her golf tournament, and I was like,
wah, wah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, yikes, bringing down the mood immediately, but it's fine.
No big deal.
Yeah, they like say it in passing. He's like, oh yeah, I remembered she lost her tournament, as like everyone's like, oh, poor you. And Jordan's like,
Exactly. She has like no reaction to it.
Yeah.
It sucked.
And then everyone's talking about how Gatsby's really nice. And then they're like immediately they're like, hey, I heard Gatsby killed a man once. And then someone else is like, I heard he was a German spy during the war. And I'm like, is he even German? Like, no one seemed to have confirmed that he's actually German.
Mm-mm. No one knows really anything about him. It's all just I heard this one thing I heard. It's just like he's a gossip mill.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a celebrity, really, to these people. I think of it the same as I think of, you know, there, when you think of like again, pre-Rona, you would see like those celebrities in Hollywood, like, you know, the Kardashians or whatever. And some, you know, you think of like they're having these big parties and there's like random people there. Obviously, not everyone knows them. They just know of them. They think they know about them. Mm-hmm. And they know about this larger than life image of who they are. You know, and each one of those people is like a real honest to God person who has their own life or whatever. But it doesn't matter because this is what we think we know about them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the vibe that I got. Like he's a celebrity, and just being, they're not even talking about him like he's a real person. Like the fact that they're just casually being like, I heard he might have killed somebody.
Yeah.
And they're really excited about it. Like, what? That's
what in the 1984?
Right. Like that's not even real. Like in real life, if you knew somebody really well and you heard that they killed somebody, you'd be a little bit more concerned than just idle conversation about that.
I know. And it's like, he also fought in the military. Like, yeah, he's killed people. Like that's kind of what you do when you're at war. So I'm like,
yeah, it's just so, it was just like a lot of really weird little tidbits. And then,
yeah. So Jordan and Nick go off and try and find Gatsby, but they enter his library and he's got a really nice one. But there's like this super drunk dude. And he like, this dude mentions that he's happened to have been drunk for a week now.
Yes.
And I was like, yo, like that's not good. Like, he's like, yeah, I thought staring at these books would make me sober. Also, fun fact, they're not cardboard, they're real books. And I was like, buddy, what are you on? Like, coke? I don't know. Well, I don't know drugs very well, but I was like, I hope you're okay.
Well, and it shows like, okay, so when the people are sober, they're a lot more restrained about what they say, about what they suspect about Gatsby. Mm-hmm. And in this case, he just like, there's no F's given here. Like, mm-hmm. he just is beyond even having a show of what he thinks. He thinks this dude is fake. And, but now he's in this library and he's like, oh my God, the books are real. Like he's not faking this part of it. There's books in here.
And it's and this is some dude that like someone happened to have randomly ran into and invited him to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, okay. So Then that they move to Nick is randomly talking to some man and he says he hasn't seen the host yet. And then the guy goes, oh, actually, I'm Gatsby.
Yeah, like real casually. I'm just talking to this dude. Yeah. Which then also shows that really, I mean, I guess Gatsby wasn't any more or less impressive than anyone else that was there, mm-hmm. at least on first glance, if he didn't even have an idea.
Yeah. I was like, all right.
But I also think it's interesting there that the first thing they talk about together is their military service. And I think mm-hmm. that having that connection is something that allows Gatsby to feel like a little bit more even that he wants to open up to Nick, or maybe he wants to get to know him a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there's probably other motives that we'll see as we go on, but it's interesting to me that that's what he first says. It's not some of the people in the party, you get the idea that he really probably asks them really, really base conversations. But in this, he's like, oh, maybe I knew you from the war. You look mm-hmm. kind of familiar to me. And they talk about some stuff like that. So,
yeah, I thought that was like a cool, like evening the playing field. So that I feel like that also opened Nick up to make Nick feel like he is someone instead of like he's happens to live next door to Gatsby kind of thing.
And it almost feels like it almost feels like Gatsby is just this really expert person at making everybody feel at ease and mm-hmm. understanding what every single person needs, wants, desires, and putting all of their information or all of their you're gonna have to cut out some of this because I'm okay. Anyway, he's really good at figuring out what everybody else wants and needs and putting all of their needs and wants ahead of his own. Because they even say, like, when that girl ripped her dress or whatever, it's like he doesn't want to be a problem to anyone. He doesn't want to be a burden to anyone. He doesn't want to start gossip with anyone. Like, he just wants everyone to have a great time and that's it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want anybody to leave his house having any bad feeling about what was happening there.
I was like, that kind of like warmed me to him to a little bit too. I was like, I kind of like people like that where they're like, I just legitimately want you to have a good time. And, you know, whatever I have to do to make you have a good time is great. It makes me worry about Gatsby though, because like,
definitely
when you do that, you know, you're depriving yourself of having an equally good time. Mm-hmm. But so Gatsby goes to answer a call and Nick turns to Jordan and is like, bruh, and starts asking all these details and no one knows anything about him. And this is like the first time you're really cued into just how little people know. Like even Jordan, who seems to be rather comfortable around Gatsby enough to at least know what he looks like, mm-hmm. Still has no details about him at all.
Anyhow, he gives large parties. I like large parties.
Like, all right, Jordan.
But it's like, they don't care to know.
Yeah.
Because other than Nick, we didn't see anybody asking him any questions or engaging with him. And if they don't know anything about him, then already Nick has one up on them because he knows that about him or thinks mm-hmm. his, we don't know if guess who's telling the truth or not, but like, here we are.
Yeah. So then a butler comes up to them and says that Gatsby would like to see Jordan alone. And so she goes off. And I was like, I feel like that was supposed to, if you were reading this and you didn't know anything about Gatsby and Daisies, I feel like that was supposed to like cue you in, like maybe he's going to have like a thing with Jordan. But immediately, like as I read that, I was like, that's kind of weird. But I didn't ever think that like they were going to have a thing.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I never got that feeling. I definitely got the feeling of he wanted to ask her a question. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we had. So, I mean, obviously it's really hard to read this book and feel like you don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if all you knew is like, there's a character named Gatsby and he loves this character named Daisy in the book and he's obsessed with her, like whatever, even if that's all you knew, then you start the book by meeting Daisy. And when you meet her, she's with this person who's like a very close friend of hers, Jordan. Mm-hmm. And so then the next thing you know, when we haven't even, when we don't know if these two characters or what, you know, what Gatsby and Daisy's interaction is, or if they even have anything, do they even know each other? Like, you don't know anything from reading the book. You definitely are like, okay, so Daisy's best friend just got pulled aside by this dude. Mm-hmm. Like, or maybe not best friend, but like a close confidant of Daisy just got pulled aside by this dude. I wonder if this has something to do with Daisy.
Hmm. Yeah, I was like, weird. Back burner for now. Like a lot of this, I'm just like, okay, information I'm taking in and I'm going to set it here. We will analyze later.
Yeah, that's definitely a back burner though. Like definitely there's something deeper to that. He wants to know something from her.
Mm-hmm.
Be it, and it could be related to Daisy, but it could also be like, you know, he seems like he likes to know who his guests are so that he can help them. So maybe she had the golf tournament. I mean, I don't know. He seems to know a lot more about the people there than they know about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So it's getting really late and everyone is trying to like fight with their significant other for some reason. Like, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's like this whole topic and they're like, why do boomers always hate their wives?
Yes.
And it's like, it was very reminiscent of that conversation to me. I was like, why?
For sure.
Like, I don't know why everyone hates their significant other. Why is no one marrying for love? Like, you don't have to marry someone you hate. Divorce exists.
I feel like you see that in all kinds of media that involves people prior to when divorce or marital counseling or whatever were accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Or when people had to marry for reasons other than love, were forced to. That's where you see that. So like basically any classic that's going to be talked about. Any of those movies from, you know, from the 40s or whatnot, like those classic movies, you're going to see that played out. And it's just, it's from a current sensibility, it definitely looks a lot different. But yeah, because it's always played off as like, oh, you know, husbands and wives just hate each other and they play
on ball and chain. And I was like,
exactly. You're like, that's not how I feel about my spouse though. Like at all, even a little bit. I love spending time with them.
I saw this video this morning about someone rating wedding toppers. And there was like that one of like, and it's always the straight couples, okay? There was one of
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, just sitting in a chair and, you know, gaming. And then the wife's like over him all mad. And I'm like, if you're already setting up your wedding day like that.
Oh, there's like legitimately one where the bride is like literally has the husband tied up and is pulling him to the altar. Like there are some really, look up wedding toppers if you want to go into that. There's some,
oh my goodness.
When I was planning for my wedding, there were, you know, you think about those things, even if you don't traditionally want them, they pop up, you know, I said the word wedding around my phone. And the next thing I'm actually probably after we get off this call, I'm going to get like a bunch of Instagram ads about wedding stuff. So you start looking to see, you know, what's out there, what exists. And you just type in wedding topper. Oh my God. There's some real winners.
Yeah, I gotta send you that video after this call so you can experience that. But it's I was just thinking about that.
Yikes.
News bulletin, don't marry someone you hate. Okay, anyways.
I think actually if we had started with that, this book might not exist.
Yeah, this book either is going to be really short, take place 20 years in the past, or
there you go right there.
So Nick says goodbye to Gatsby and Gatsby's like, hey, let's go in the hydroplane tomorrow. And Nick's like, okay, sure, if that's what you want to do. And so they set a time for 9, and as Nick gets outside, there's a car wreck. This is the first mention of like a tire falling off a car, but it's mentioned again later and I didn't even write it down, but I was like, why are all these tires just falling off these people's car? And like, he's in a ditch and also they're drinking and driving.
Yeah, I would file this one away for later.
Okay. Like, I hope it gets brought back up again, but I was like,
I think you will, as the story develops, you'll see that this is sort of foreshadowing of something else that will happen. I really don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. It's because I don't know anything.
I think it shows, though, kind of how little regard some of these people have for the well-being of others, and how little regard they have for their equipment and the things, the material possessions that they have, because they can just replace them or whatever if something happens to them. So they just don't like have a lot of regard for the things that we would think. And I think it shows, you know, Nick really thinks this entire situation is really strange, and he's like, what the hell just happened? And I think we as readers also are supposed to think like, okay, that was really weird. Like, why were people drinking and driving? Mm-hmm. Why did they not seem to care if they were drinking and driving? Why do they not seem to care? And why are they making these horrible decisions because of this? The idea that, you know, maybe cars weren't as well put together. And so there's another, this is also the second scene that we've had that's involved car repair of some sort. So
yeah, true.
There's a lot to unpack here. This is definitely a file it away, though.
Yeah, this is a set it on a pedestal. We'll come back to it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't forget about it. Just remember this for right now. And then Nick's like, okay. And then goes home. And I was like, all right, Nick. So then he sums up his summer in which he worked, met a girl that didn't work out. And then he started to really like New York. And then I was like, oh, are Nick and Jordan kind of dating? They're going to a lot of places. And I was like, oop. Never mind. Nick realizes that Jordan's a compulsive liar. And then next note is, wait, Nick doesn't care if a woman is dishonest. I don't like this. This was a succession of three notes very quickly, sentence after sentence, as he's like revealing this relationship with Jordan. I was like, And then another little probably bit of foreshadowing that I feel is going to happen. Jordan is a horrendously awful driver, and she says that everyone else should be careful when she's on the street. I'm like, okay, Jordan.
Yeah, all this driving stuff, put it on a pedestal and hold it there. Put it in a small box and put it back, not it too away far away. But yeah.
It's like, okay, Jordan, like, bad, being a terrible driver is not something to brag about. Like, she has money. She's a golf champion tournament, not champion, almost champion. But I'm like, you could just, like, you know, not drive, get a chauffeur, I guess.
I mean, cars were also way different back then. And even just having a car was a huge status symbol, having a car of your own, and how they were put together. And their safety was like incredibly different in the time period that this is written. So it definitely shows that she doesn't care that she's such a bad driver, shows that she also doesn't have that respect for the material and the privilege that she has to drive at all, but also that she doesn't think of consequences.
Yeah.
And that can be said for a lot of people in the story.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's like people think in this book specifically that they have a right to things that are a privilege. And it's like, I feel like that's getting more and more unwrapped.
100%. I think that is a very astute observation for this book in general. It is interesting, like, how Nick seems not really to like Jordan, but also to like her. Like, he's kind of intrigued about her, but he definitely doesn't think that she's, you know, perfect or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I think he likes hanging out with her. I think he likes going places. At least that's the feeling that you get, but I don't know.
Yeah. And this is the point where Nick hints that he's kind of engaged. He's just breaking something off back home. And I'm like, is this going to come up ever again? Or like, is that just something where like, okay, Nick.
So then it's interesting because right after that, he says, everyone suspects himself of at least one of the cardinal virtues, and this is mine. I am one of the few honest people that I have ever known. And you're like, dude, like, you're honest to us as the narrator. You're telling us what happened. But if you just signed the letter "Love, Nick" to the girl back home, maybe your definition of honest is a little different than mine.
I know. I was like, at least he's like, it sounds like he's trying to break it off, which is like good.
Yeah,
because obviously he's pursuing others at this point. Maybe had a fling with a downstairs neighbor man. You know, that's neither here nor there. We don't know.
Yeah.
But again, I just, at least he's like trying, which is more than can be said for most people in this novel.
Sure. And I mean, he's, it's funny though, like he says he's honest, but he is honest to us, I feel like, mm-hmm. because as the narrator, he didn't have to tell us that stuff, but he does. Yeah. He tells it like it is, straight up. And I think that also helps you as the reader be like, okay, maybe I can believe him more because he's mm-hmm. willing to tell me who he is as a person, like warts and all, he's going to yeah. say. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So oh, I really sort of liked Nick at this point. I was like, all right, we're chill. Me and you, we're straight. That's fine. We'll figure it out together. We're on a journey. Take me on this adventure with you, Nick.
For sure. We are on a journey and Nick is the captain of this ship and he will take us on a journey for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Bailey Bookish Podcast. As I mentioned at the beginning, on Friday, we'll be having the Great Gatsby comparison over on patreon.com. So if you haven't checked us out on Patreon, it's patreon.com/baileybookish. If you join at the $10 a month tier, you get bonus episodes every single month. There's already a few on there. So we did cover Bridget Jones' Diary. We also covered the 1995 versus 2008 Pride and Prejudice. Is that right? That feels right. Well, those are on there. And we have plenty more planned in the future. So be sure to check those out. If you're interested in more exclusive content, there's quite a few options over there. We also will be discussing the rest of Great Gatsby continuing on, and then we'll do the Leonardo DiCaprio movie at the very end. So I feel like the Patreon exclusive for this month is going to be a little bit of a teaser, which is kind of fun. Also, if you are interested in Dungeons and Dragons, over on the Rhapsodic Underscore Geeks channel on Twitch, me and Nova, who's been on here previously, will be guesting over on their Twitch. And we are playing a very fun Acquisitions Incorporated game, which is basically like a franchise of adventurers. And I'm playing a changeling druid for the very first time. I've never played D&D before until now, and I'm really enjoying that. So if that's something you're interested in, I'd love to see you guys in Twitch. And I host them on my Twitch channel on that day. So if you want to watch and you don't want to navigate all the way over, just go to the Barely Bookish on Twitch and it'll all be hosting it, so you should be able to see it perfectly fine. But yeah, that's kind of all I've got for you guys this week. I hope you guys are having a good week. I hope that fun things are happening for you guys. I hope you guys have a good summer. It's the start of summer, so I'm very excited about summer. You know, I don't know, summer's just a fun time. Maybe it's the schooling, and summer always feels kind of like a break for me. But yeah, that's kind of all I've got for you guys. Because, you know, Jessica didn't get to join us on this outro, I know she would suggest you guys check out your local library, so please consider doing that, because libraries are a great free resource we have here in America, and there are a lot of great things at your local library, and there's a lot of great librarians who are ready to help you with whatever you need. But without further ado, our logo was designed by my little sibling, Sarah. Our theme song is by Raphael Crux on freepd.com. And that's all I've got for you guys, so I'll catch you guys later. Bye!